battle going on nearby. A battle in which his people were fighting and very possibly dying. But something told Wedge that this was important. "Hang on a minute," he told Five. "I want to check this out." His momentum had already taken him to the Star Cruiser's bow. He curved around in front of the ship, leaning back into a spiral again. And suddenly, his canopy lit up with laser fire, and his X-Wing jolted like a startled animal beneath him. The Star Cruiser had fired on him. In his ear, he heard Five shout something. "Stay back!" Wedge snapped, fighting against the sudden drop in power and giving his scopes a quick scan. "I'm hit, but not bad."
"They fired on you."
"Yeah, I know," Wedge said, trying to maintain some kind of evasive maneuvering with what little control he had left. Fortunately, the systems were starting to come back online as his R2 unit did some fast rerouting. Even more fortunately, the Star Cruiser didn't seem inclined to shoot at him again. But why had it fired in the first place? Unless... His own R2 was too busy with rerouting chores to handle anything else at the moment. "Rogue Five, I need a fast sensor scan. Where are the rest of those cone things?"
"Hang on, I'll check. Scope shows... I don't find more than about 15 of them. Nearest one's 10 kilometers away, bearing 118 Mark IV.
Wedge felt something hard settle into his stomach. 15? Out of the 50 that had been in the freighter with the TIE fighters? So where had the rest of them gone? "Let's go take a look," he said, turning into an intercept vector. The cone thing was heading toward another escort frigate like the Larkas he saw, with 4 TIE fighters running interference for it. Not that there was much potential for interference. If the frigate was manned anywhere near as sparsely as the Larkas, it would have precious little chance of fighting back. "Let's see if we can take them before they notice us," he told Five as they closed the distance. Abruptly, all 4 TIE fighters peeled off and came around. So much for surprise. "Take the 2 on the right, Rogue Five. I'll take the others."
"Copy."
Wedge waited until the last second before firing on the first of his targets, swinging around instantly to avoid collision with the other. It swept past beneath him, his X-Wing shuddering as it took another hit. He leaned hard into the turn, catching a glimpse of the TIE fighter dropping into a pursuit slot as he did so. Suddenly, something shot past him, spitting laser fire and twisting back and around in some kind of insane variant on a drunkard's walk evasive maneuver. The TIE fighter caught a direct hit and blew into a spectacular cloud of fiery gas. Wedge finished his turn, just as Rogue Five's second target fighter did likewise.
"All clear, Wedge," a familiar voice called into his ear. "You damaged?"
"I'm fine, Luke," Wedge assured him. "Thanks."
"Look, there it goes,"
Han's voice cut in.
"Over by the frigate. It's one of Lando's mole miners, all right."
"I see it," Luke said. "What's it doing out here?"
"I saw one stuck onto the Star Cruiser back there," Wedge told him, swinging back on course for the frigate. "Looks like this one's trying to do the same thing. I don't know why."
"Whatever it's doing, let's stop it," Han said.
"Right." It was, Wedge saw, going to be a close race, but it was quickly clear that the mole miner was going to win it. Already, it had turned its base around toward the frigate and was starting to nestle up against the hull. And just before it closed the gap completely, he caught a glimpse of an acridly brilliant light.
"What was that?" Luke asked.
"I don't know," Wedge said, blinking away the afterimage. "It looked too bright for laser fire."
"It was a plasma jet,"
Han grunted as the Falcon came up alongside him.
"Right on top of the bridge emergency escape hatch. That's what they wanted the mole miners for. They're using him to burn through the hulls."
He broke off, and abruptly he swore.
"Luke, we got it backward. They're not here to wreck the fleet. They're here to steal it."
For a long heartbeat, Luke just stared at the frigate. And then, like pieces clicking together in a puzzle, it all fell into place. The mole miners, the undermanned and underdefended capital ships that the New Republic had been forced to press into shipping service, the Imperial fleet out there that seemed to be making no real effort to push its way past the system's defenses, and a New Republic Star Cruiser, mole miner planted firmly on its side, that had just fired on Wedge's X-Wing. He took a moment to scan the sky around him, moving with deceptive slowness through the continuing starfighter battle. A number of warships were beginning to pull out.
We've got to stop them, he told the others.
Good thinking,
Han agreed.
How?
Is there any way we can get aboard them ourselves? He asked. Lando said the mole miners were two-man ships. The Imperials can't possibly have packed more than 4 or 5 stormtroopers in each one of them.
The way those warships are manned at the moment, 4 stormtroopers would be plenty,
Wedge pointed out. Yes, but I could take them, Luke said.
On all 50 ships?
Han countered.
Besides, you blast the hatch open to vacuum, and you'll have pressure bulkheads closing all over the ship. Take you forever to even get to the bridge.
Luke gritted his teeth, but Han was right. Then we have to disable them, he said. Knock out their engines or control systems or something. If they get out to the perimeter and those Star Destroyers, we'll never see them again.
Oh, we'll see them again,
Han growled.
Pointed straight back at us. You're right. Disabling as many as we can is our best shot. We're never going to stop all 50, though.
We don't have 50 to stop. At least not yet,
Wedge put in.
There are still 12 mole miners that haven't attached themselves to ships.
Good. Let's take them out first,
Han said.
You got vectors on them?
Feeding your computer now.
Okay. Okay, here we go.
The Falcon twisted around and headed off in a new direction.
Luke, get on the comm and tell Sluis Control what's happening,
he added.
Tell them not to let any ships out of the orbit dock area.
Right.
Luke switched channels on the comm, and as he did so, he was suddenly aware of a slight change in sense from the Falcon's cockpit. Han, you all right?
Huh? Sure, why?
I don't know, you seem to change.
I had a half grip on some idea,
Han said.
But it's gone now. Come on, make that call. I want you back on the quads when we get there.
The call to Sluis Control was over well before they reached their target mole miner. They thank us for the information, Luke reported to the others. But they say they don't have anything to spare at the moment to help us.
Probably don't,
Han agreed.
Okay, I see 2 TIE fighters running escort. Wedge, you and Rogue 5 take them out, while Luke and I hit the mole miner.
Got it,
Wedge confirmed. The 2 X-Wings shot past Luke's canopy, flaring apart into intercept mode as the TIE fighters broke formation and came around to meet the attack.
Luke, try to blow it apart instead of disintegrating it,
Han suggested.
Let's see how many people the Imperials have got stuffed inside.
Got it,
Luke said. The mole miner was in his sights now. Adjusting his power level down, he fired. The truncated cone flared as the metal dead center of the shot boiled away into glowing gas. The rest of the craft seemed intact, though, and Luke was just lining up for a second shot when the hatch at the top abruptly popped open. And through the opening, a monstrous robot-like figure came charging out. What?
It's a space trooper,
Han snapped back.
A stormtrooper in zero-G armor. Hang on!
He spun the Falcon around away from the space trooper, but not before there was a flash from a protuberance atop the other's backpack, and the hull around Luke slammed with a violent concussion. Han rolled the ship around, blocking Luke's view, as another concussion rocked them. And then they were pulling away. Pulling away, but with agonizing slowness. Luke swallowed hard, wondering what kind of damage they'd taken.
Han! Luke! You all right?
Wedge's voice called anxiously.
Yeah, for now,
Han called back.
You get the TIE fighters?
Yes. I think the mole miner's still underway, though.
Well, then blast it,
Han said.
Nothing cute. Just blow it apart. But watch out for that space trooper. He's using miniature proton torpedoes or something. I'm trying to draw him away. I don't know if he'll fall for it.
He's not,
Wedge said grimly.
He's staying right on top of the mole miner. They're heading for a passenger liner. Looks like they'll make it, too.
Han swore under his breath.
Probably got a few regular stormtrooper buddies still in there. All right, I guess we do this the hard way. Hang on, Luke. We're going to ram him.
We're what?
Luke's last word was lost in the roar from the engines as Han sent the Falcon flying straight out and then around in a hard turn. The mole miner and space trooper came back into Luke's line of sight. Wedge had been wrong. The space trooper wasn't standing by the damaged mole miner. He was, in fact, sidling quickly away from it. The twin protuberances on top of his backpack began flashing again, and a couple of seconds later, the Falcon's hull began ringing with proton torpedo blasts.
Get ready,
Han called. Luke braced himself, trying not to think about what would happen if one of those torpedoes hit his canopy. And trying, too, not to wonder if Han could really ram the space trooper without also plowing into the passenger liner directly behind him. Ignoring the proton blast, the Falcon continued accelerating. And without warning, Han dropped the ship beneath the space trooper's line of fire.
Wedge, go!
From beneath Luke's line of sight, an X-Wing flashed upward, laser cannon blazing, and the mole miner shattered into flaming dust.
Good shot,
Han told him, a note of satisfaction in his voice, as he veered underneath the liner, nearly taking the Falcon's main sensor dish off in the process.
There you go, hotshot. Enjoy your view of the battle.
Belatedly, the light dawned. He was listening in on our channel, Luke said. You just wanted to decoy him into moving away from the mole miner.
You got it,
Han said.
I figured he'd tap in. Imperials always do when they can.
He trailed off. What is it? Luke asked.
I don't know,
Han said slowly.
There's something about this whole thing that keeps poking at me, and I can't figure out what it is. Never mind. Our hotshot space trooper will keep for now. Let's go hit some more mole miners.
It was just as well, Pelion thought, that they were only here to keep the enemy tied up. The Sluissi and their new Republic allies were putting up one terrific fight. On his status board, a section of the Chimera's shield schematic went red.
Get that starboard shield back up,
he ordered, giving the sky in that direction a quick scan. There were half a dozen warships out there, all of them firing like mad, with a battle station and backstop position behind them. If their sensors showed that the Chimera's starboard shields were starting to go...
Starboard turbo lasers. Focus all fire on the assault frigate at 32 Mark 40.
Thrawn spoke up calmly.
Concentrate on the starboard side of the ship only.
The Chimera gun crews responded with a withering hail of laser fire. The assault frigate tried to swerve away, but even as it turned, its entire starboard side seemed to flash with vaporized metal. The weapons from that section, which had been firing non-stop, went abruptly silent.
Excellent, Thrawn said. Starboard tractor crews, lock on and bring it close. Try to keep it between the damaged shields and the enemy. And be sure to keep its starboard side facing toward us. The port side may still have active weapons and a crew to use them.
Clearly against its will, the assault frigate began to move inward. Pelion watched it for a moment, then returned his attention to the overall battle. He had no doubt the tractor crew would do the job right. They'd shown a remarkable increase in efficiency and competence lately.
TIE Squadron 4, keep after that B-Wing group,
he instructed.
Port ion cannon, keep up the pressure on that command center.
He looked at Thrawn.
Any specific orders, Admiral?
Thrawn shook his head.
No, the battle seems to be progressing as planned.
He turned his glowing eyes on Pelion.
What word from Cloak Leader?
Pelion checked the proper display.
The TIE fighters are still engaging the various escort ships,
he reported.
43 of the mole miners have successfully attached to target ships. Of those, 39 are secure and making for the perimeter. 4 are still encountering internal resistance, though they anticipate a quick victory.
And the other 8?
They've been destroyed,
Pelion told him.
Including 2 of those with a space trooper aboard. One of those space troopers is failing to respond to comm, presumably killed with his craft. The other is still functional. Cloak Leader has ordered him to join the attack on the escort ships. Countermand that,
Thrawn said.
I'm quite aware that stormtroopers have infinite confidence in themselves, but that sort of deep space combat is not what space trooper suits were designed for. Have Cloak Leader detail a TIE fighter to bring him out, and also inform him that his wing is to begin pulling back to the perimeter.
Pelion frowned.
You mean now, sir?
Certainly now.
Thrawn nodded toward the viewport.
The first of our new ships will begin arriving within 15 minutes. As soon as they're all with us, the task force will be withdrawing.
But...
The rebel forces within the perimeter are of no further concern to us, Captain, Thrawn said with quiet satisfaction. The captured ships are on their way. With or without TIE fighter cover, there's nothing the rebels can do to stop them.
Han brought the Falcon as close as he could to the frigate's engines without risking a backwash, feeling the slight multiple dips in ship's power as Luke repeatedly fired the quads.
Anything?
He asked as they came up around the other side.
Doesn't look like it, Luke said. There's just too much armor over the coolant feeder lines.
Han glanced along the frigate's course, fighting back the urge to swear. They were already uncomfortably close to the perimeter battle, and getting closer all the time.
This isn't getting us anywhere. There's got to be some way to take out a capital ship.
That's what the other capital ships are for,
Wedge put in.
But you're right. This isn't working.
Han pursed his lips.
R2, you still online back there?
He called. The droid's beeping came faintly up the cockpit corridor.
Go through your schematics again,
Han ordered.
See if you can find us another weak point.
R2 beeped again in acknowledgement, but it wasn't a very optimistic beep.
He's not going to find anything better, Han,
Luke said, echoing Han's own private assessment.
I don't think we've got any choice left. I'm going to have to go topside and use my lightsaber on it.
That's crazy, and you know it,
Han growled.
Without a proper pressure suit, and with engine coolant spraying all over you if it works?
How about using one of the droids?
Wedge suggested.
Neither of them can do it,
Luke told him.
R2 hasn't got the manipulative ability, and I wouldn't trust 3PO with a weapon, especially not with all the high acceleration maneuvers we're making.
What we need is a remote manipulator arm, Han said. Something that Luke could use inside while...
He broke off. In a flash of inspiration, there it was. The thing that had been bothering him ever since they'd walked into this crazy battle.
Lando!
He called into the intercom.
Lando, get up here!
I've got him strapped in,
Luke reminded him.
Well, go unstrap him and get him up here,
Han snapped.
Now!
Luke didn't waste time with questions.
Right,
he said.
What is it?
Wedge asked tensely. Han clenched his teeth.
We were there on Niklon when the Imperials stole these mole miners from Lando,
he told the other.
We had to reroute our communications through some jamming.
Okay, so?
So why were they jamming us? Han asked. To keep us from calling for help? From who? They're not jamming us here, you notice.
I give up,
Wedge said, starting to sound a little testy.
Why?
Because they had to. Because...
Because most of the mole miners on Niklon were running on radio remote,
came a tired voice from behind him. Han turned around to see Lando easing his way carefully into the cockpit, clearly running at half speed, but just as clearly determined to make it. Luke was right behind him, a steadying hand on his elbow.
You heard all that?
Han asked him.
Every part that mattered,
Lando said, dropping into the co-pilot's seat.
I could kick myself for not seeing it long ago.
Me too. You remember any of the command codes?
Most of them, Lando said. What do you need?
We don't have time for anything fancy.
Han nodded toward the frigate, now lying below them.
The mole miners are still attached to the ships. Just start them all running.
Lando looked at him in surprise.
Start them running? He echoed.
You got it, Han confirmed. All of them are going to be near a bridge or control wing. If they can burn through enough equipment and wiring, it should knock out a whole lot of them.
Lando exhaled noisily, tilting his head sideways in a familiar gesture of reluctant acceptance.
You're the boss,
he said, fingers moving over the comm keyboard.
I just hope you know what you're doing. Ready?
Han braced himself.
Do it!
Lando keyed a final section of code, and beneath them, the frigate twitched. Not a big twitch, not at first. But as the seconds passed, it became increasingly clear that something down there was wrong. The main engines flickered a few times and then died amid short bursts from the auxiliaries. Its drive toward the perimeter fighting faltered, its etheric control surfaces kicking in and then out again, striving to change course in random directions. The big ship floundered almost to a halt. And suddenly, the side of the hull directly opposite the mole miner's position erupted in a brilliant burst of flame.
It's cut all the way through,
Lando gasped, his tone not sure whether to be proud or dismayed by his handiwork. A TIE fighter, perhaps answering a distress call from the stormtroopers inside, swept directly into the stream of superheated plasma before it could maneuver away. It emerged from the other side, its solar panels blazing with fire, and exploded.
It's working,
Wedge called, sounding awed.
Look, it's working.
Han looked up from the frigate. All around them, all throughout the orbit dock area, ships that had been making for deep space were suddenly twisting around like metallic animals in the throes of death. All of them with tongues of flame shooting from their sides. For a long minute, Thrawn sat in silence, staring down at his status boards, apparently oblivious to the battle still raging on all around them. Pelian held his breath, waiting for the inevitable explosion of injured pride at the unexpected reversal, wondering what form that explosion would take. Abruptly, the Grand Admiral raised his eyes to the viewport.
Have all the remaining Cloak Force TIE fighters returned to our ships, Captain?
He asked calmly.
Yes, sir,
Pelian told him. Still waiting. Thrawn nodded.
Then order the task force to begin its withdrawal.
Withdrawal?
Pelian asked cautiously. It was not exactly the order he'd been anticipating. Thrawn looked at him, a faint smile on his face.
You were expecting, perhaps, that I'd order an all-out attack?
He asked.
That I would seek to cover our defeat in a frenzy of false and futile heroics?
Of course not,
Pelian protested. But he knew down deep that the other knew the truth. Thrawn's smile remained, but was suddenly cold.
We haven't been defeated, Captain, he said quietly. Merely slowed down a bit. We have Wayland, and we have the treasures of the Emperor's storehouse. Sluis Van was to be merely a preliminary to the campaign, not the campaign itself. As long as we have Mount Tantiss, our ultimate victory is still assured.
He looked out the viewport, a thoughtful expression on his face.
We've lost this particular prize, Captain, but that is all we've lost. I will not waste ships and men trying to change that which cannot be changed. There will be many more opportunities to obtain the ships we need. Carry out your orders.
Yes, Admiral,
Pelian said, turning back to his status board, a surge of relief washing through him. So there would not be an explosion after all. And with a twinge of guilt, he realized that he should have known better from the start. Thrawn was not merely a soldier, like so many others Pelian had served with. He was instead a true warrior, with his eye set on the final goal and not on his own personal glory. Taking one last look out the viewport, Pelian issued the order to retreat and wondered once again what the Battle of Endor would have been like if Thrawn had been in command. Chapter 32. It took a while longer after the Imperial fleet pulled out for the battle to be officially over. But with the Star Destroyers gone, the outcome was never in doubt. The regular stormtroopers were the easiest. Most of them were dead already, killed when Lando's activation of the mole miners had ruptured the air seals of their stolen ships and left them open to vacuum, and the rest were taken without much trouble. The 8 remaining space troopers, whose zero-G suits had allowed them to keep fighting after their ships were disabled, were another story entirely. Ignoring all calls to surrender, they fanned out through the shipyards, clearly intent on causing as much damage as they could before the inevitable. 6 were hunted down and destroyed, the other 2 eventually self-destructed, one managing to cripple a corvette in the process. He left behind him a shipyard and orbit dock facility in an uproar, and a great number of severely damaged major ships.
Not exactly what you'd call a resounding victory,
Captain Affion grunted, surveying what was left of the Larkhess's bridge through a pressure bulkhead viewport as he gingerly adjusted a battle dressing that had been applied to his forehead.
Gonna take a couple of months' work just to rewire all the control circuits.
Would you rather the Imperials have gotten it whole?
Han demanded from behind him.
trying to ignore his own mixed feelings about this whole thing. Yes, it had worked. But at what cost?
Not at all, Affion replied calmly. You did what you had to. And I'd say that even if my own neck hadn't been on the line. I'm just saying what others will say. That destroying all these ships in order to save them was not exactly the optimal solution.
Han threw a look at Luke.
You sound like Counselor Phalia,
he accused Affion. The other nodded.
Exactly.
Well, fortunately, Phalia's only one voice, Luke offered.
Yeah, but it's a loud one,
Han said sourly.
And one that a lot of people are starting to listen to,
Wedge added,
including important military people.
He'll find some way to parlay this incident into his own political gain,
Affion rumbled.
You just watch him.
Han's rejoinder was interrupted by a trilling from the wall intercom. Affion stepped over and tapped the switch.
Affion here, he said.
Sluis Control Communications, a voice replied. We have an incoming call from Coruscant for Captain Solo. Is he with you?
Right here,
Han called, stepping over to the speaker.
Go ahead.
There was a slight pause, and then a familiar and sorely missed voice came on.
Han, it's Leia.
Leia,
Han said, feeling a delighted and probably slightly foolish-looking grin spread across his face. A second later, though...
Wait a minute. What are you doing back on Coruscant?
I think I've taken care of our other problem,
she said. Her voice, he noticed for the first time, sounded tense and more than a little ragged.
At least for the moment.
Han threw a frown across the room at Luke.
You think?
Look, that's not important right now. What's important is that you get back here right away.
Something cold and hard settled into Han's stomach. For Leia to be this upset.
What's wrong?
He heard her take a deep breath.
Admiral Akbar has been arrested and removed from command on charges of treason.
The room abruptly filled with a brittle silence. Han looked in turn at Luke, at Affion, at Wedge, but there didn't seem to be anything to say.
I'll be there as soon as I can, he told Leia. Luke's here too. You want me to bring him?
Yes, if he can manage it,
she said.
Akbar's going to need all the friends he can get.
Okay, Han said. Call me in the Falcon if there's any more news. We're heading over there right now.
I'll see you soon. I love you, Han.
Me too.
He broke the connection, turned back to the others.
Well, he said, to no one in particular. There goes the hammer. You coming, Luke?
Luke looked at Wedge.
Have your people had a chance to do anything with my X-Wing yet?
Not yet,
Wedge said, shaking his head.
But it's just been officially bumped to the top of the priority list. We'll have it ready to fly in 2 hours, even if I have to take the motivators out of my own ship to do it.
Luke nodded and looked back at Han.
I'll fly into Coruscant on my own then, he said. Let me just come with you and get R2 off the Falcon.
Right. Come on.
Good luck,
Affion called softly after them. And yes, Han thought as they hurried down the corridor toward the hatchway where the Falcon was docked, the hammer was indeed coming down. If Phalia and his faction pushed too hard and too fast, and knowing Phalia, he would almost certainly push too hard and too fast.
We could be on the edge of a civil war here,
Luke murmured his thought back at him.
Yeah, well, we're not going to let that happen,
Han told him with confidence he didn't feel.
We haven't gone through a war and back just to watch some overambitious Bothan wreck it.
How are we going to stop him?
Han grimaced.
We'll think of something.
To be continued. This is Mark Thompson. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Heir to the Empire, the 20th Anniversary Edition by Timothy Zahn. Be sure to check out our exclusive original program, Star Wars, Heir to the Empire, Behind the Scenes, An Expanded Universe is Born, featuring all new commentary by author Timothy Zahn and editor Betsy Mitchell. You can find it available for download online. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars, Heir to the Empire, the 20th Anniversary Edition, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited. Trademark and copyright 2011. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.